Hello, everybody. This is a discussion of macroeconomics fall 2009 exam 2, and the a copy of the exam and the answer key are available also. On the web page. Question 1, which of the following occurs during a recession? The correct answer is output falls, employment falls, and unemployment rises. Definitions and page references for discussion of recessions, pages 29 to 30, not page 93, page 230 to 240. And then don't forget the discussion of recent recessions in the table, page 238. Question 2. Using the table below, calculate GDP for a particular year. Now for this question, for any of these questions, you need to find a way of having the question trigger some of your knowledge. Now, calculating GDP. Well, what that triggers in my memory is that there are three different methods to calculate GDP. The final sales approach, the factor incomes approach, or the value-added approach. This particular question, too, if you look at the data, the data is available to do the final sales approach because you've got C plus I plus G plus X minus W. C, consumption spending, 1,000. I, private investment spending, 400. G, government purchases, 200. Exports, 400. And imports, 550. So the answer is 1,000 plus 400 plus 200 plus 400 minus 550. And if you add that, it totals to 1,450, which is the answer. That was a hard question for a number of you. Question 3, what is the difference between nominal and real GDP? One reference for this is page 147. A percent change in real equals the percent change in nominal minus percent change in prices. The basic idea is that real GDP is derived by knowing nominal GDP and then adjusting for inflation. So real GDP is adjusted for changes in the price level. Nominal GDP is not. That would be the best answer. So in other words, real GDP is GDP with the effect of price changes removed. So real GDP is a number which has nothing to do with changes of prices. All right, question 4. Suppose an economy has 90,000 employed, 10,000 unemployed. What is the unemployment rate? Now, for this one, you had to remember what the definition is of the unemployment rate, that the unemployment rate equals the total of unemployed divided by the total labor force. And the total labor force is the number of people who have jobs plus the people that are unemployed. 90,000 people have jobs, 10,000 are unemployed, for a total of 100,000 in the labor force. The unemployed is 10,000. So the unemployment rate is 10,000 divided by 100,000. And converted into percent. That is a total of 10%. For unemployment, a discussion of unemployment, look at pages 91 through 94. Now, question five. Full Employment and Balanced Growth Act of 1978. Congress set a target for the unemployment rate. What was it? And the answer is 4%, which is seldom achieved. The page reference is page 92. Question six. If the price of your house rises 7%, while your cost of living, price of your base year basket, rises 10%, then what has happened to the real value of your house? In other words, if you sell your house, what will you be able to buy with the money? If the price of your house has risen 7%, but the cost of the things you buy has risen by 10%, then you won't be able to buy as much with your money because the prices of the things you buy have gone up by more. The appropriate formula is the percent change in nominal equals percent change in real plus percent change in prices. Again, the page reference is page 147. And so the correct answer is that the real value of your house has fallen about 3% because the percent change in nominal was plus 7, but prices have risen by plus 10. And so you have plus 7 minus 10, and you get minus 3. Questions 3, 5, and 6, a lot of people missed. Okay, question 7. The economy is in full employment equilibrium, and the money supply has increased 12%. What do we expect? The answer is we expect prices to rise 12%. Well, this question came straight out of our circular flow model and the four experiments. One of the four experiments was exactly this. This was, I thought, an easy question. It was intended to give easy points to people. And most of you did get it right. Question 8, choose the best answer. Based on what your professor has said in lecture, if the economy is in full employment equilibrium, and the money supply increases by a small amount, like 3%, what is going to happen? Well, in lecture, I made the point that if the money supply, if you start off in full employment equilibrium, or any equilibrium, and increase the money supply by a small percentage, that the excess supply of money which results is so small that it may be hardly noticeable, and that it may be a very long period of time before any changes in behavior actually occur as a result. Therefore, when you have a small excess supply of money, the consequences of that excess supply can take a very long time. And therefore, And the 3% increase in the money supply is quite small, as you can imagine. If you imagine that at the end of the month you have $103 in your pocket instead of $100, and that this is supposed to make you uncomfortable, well, no, you'll hardly notice it. So the answers that do not work are, prices will rise about 3% within a year. Absolutely not. It'll take much longer than that. Economic activity will increase by 3%. Well, it won't for two reasons. First, it would take a long time anyway, but second, we're already at full employment, so it can't increase. Prices will rise by 3% within less than 2 years. Well, now this is a judgment call, but our discussion suggests that it would take a very long time for a 3% increase to have an effect. So that's probably a bad answer unless there's a better answer, provided there is a better answer. The smaller the inflation rate, the more immediate the response, so prices will rise quickly. Well, that's just word salad. And anyway, if anything, it's backwards. And what about prices may take a very long time to rise and will not rise by more than about 3%? Well, that I think is the best answer. Okay, so question 8. That would be the best answer. Question 9. Repeat your answer. Question 9. Suppose nominal GDP was $4,200 billion 2 years ago and is $2,100 now. And the GDP price index has fallen from 120 2 years ago to 40 today. If real GDP was 4,200 2 years ago, what is it today? Well, this problem you can solve by using the equation that I gave you in class to convert large changes in nominal values and large changes in the price index, and use these numbers to compute what has happened to the real value of a thing. And the formula is given right above question 9. In that formula, the final value of real equals the initial value of real, which in this case, the initial value was 2 years ago. The initial value of real is 4,200, so IR is 4,200. The final nominal value is 2,100. FN is 2,100 divided by IN, the initial nominal value, which was 4,200. And then the initial price index was 120 2 years ago, so 120 goes in for PI. And the final value is 40 today, all right? So putting it all together, you have 4,200 multiplied by 2,100 divided by 4,200 multiplied by 120 divided by 40. The 4,200s cancel out. The 120 divided by 40 equals 3. And 3 times 2,100, therefore, is 3,600. I'm sorry, 6,300. So the correct answer is 6,300. A lot of people miss this one. I thought it was going to be one of the easiest. You should learn how to use that formula to compute changes in real. That question definitely will occur on both of the next two tests. Question 10, choose the best answer based on the circular flow model as presented in the lecture. If the economy is in an unemployment equilibrium with 8% extra unemployment, and then the money supply is increased by 10%, what's going to happen? And the correct answer is the economy will grow by 8%, but prices may not increase very much because the excess money growth is quite small, only 2%. Now, the answer to this question is based on one of the circular flow model experiments we did, in which we had a certain amount of unemployment, and then we increased the money supply to see what happened. And what we learned is that the if you increase the money supply by more than the amount of unemployment, that the first thing happens is the unemployment disappears, and then if there's an excess supply of money, then prices rise. And we learned that if you increase the money supply by less than the amount of unemployment, then the economy grows by that, the amount of the increase in the money supply. And there is no inflation. Okay, so the answers which are no good, the economy will grow by 6% and prices by 2%, no. The economy will grow by 8%. What about the economy will grow by 8% and prices will rise by 2% within a year or two? Well, now, this on the surface of it, I mean, prices will eventually rise by 2%, but it may take many years. Within a year or 2 years, that's probably that's not enough time, because the excess growth of the money supply is so small that the effect is going to be very spread out in time. So although that answer might be just barely acceptable, you'd probably be agreeing to an answer which was not correct. What about the economy will not grow, but prices will increase by 10%? Well, that's silly. With unemployment, the first thing that happens is the unemployment disappears. So the correct answer is the economy will go by 8%, but prices may not increase very much, because the excess money growth is quite small, only 2%. All right, question 11. In the language of economists, full employment means the situation in which cyclical unemployment is zero. The page reference is page 123. Question 12. When explaining expansions and recessions, the classical model is reliable? No, it has nothing to say about expansions and recessions. According to the classical model, the economy will not need to have recessions, will not have recessions, but even if it did, the recessions would disappear by themselves. The classical model is the favorite explanatory tool of economists? No, it's not used very often anymore. The classical model is overly focused on the labor market? No, in fact, in the classical model, the assumption is made that all markets clear, including the labor market. There's no reason to focus on it. It's not a problem. The classical model is sometimes accurate and sometimes not. The classical model describes a particular situation, and it's just a model. Can a model be accurate? No, a model can be logical or consistent, but its accuracy is not the issue. So the correct answer is the classical model is seriously flawed. All right, question 13. Which of the following is a common reaction to an increase in the interest rate? What happens when interest rates go up? Now, to answer that question, you had to think back to all the different discussions of interest rates we've had. The subject of interest rates has come up in several different contexts. But probably the most important context is that the interest rates has come up in the context of thinking about savers and excess spenders. And when we talk about excess spenders, they respond to changes in interest rates. And what do excess spenders buy? And excess spenders buy houses and cars and new factories and so on. So which of the following is a common reaction to an increase in interest rates? The best answer is a decrease in spending on new homes. An increase in interest rates does not create an expansion. It does not create an increase in military spending or a war. And there's no connection that I know of between an increase in interest rates and a decline in oil prices. So any other answer would be a very big stretch. Most of you got that question right. Question 14. The recession of 1982 was largely caused on purpose by the Federal Reserve's decision to raise interest rates and combat inflation. The page reference is page 238. And you'll notice that this page 238, which has that table about recessions, has occurred several times on this test. And I asked you to memorize each of the recessions in that table. And for each recession, what was the triggering event and which were the major sectors that were affected? And I'm going to put more questions on the next test. By studying that table, you will be able to get a minimum of 3 points on each of the next tests. Question 15, based on the circular flow model as presented in recent lectures, and beginning in an unemployment equilibrium with 4% cyclical unemployment, what happens if the money supply is increased by 10%? The answer is, it may take a year or two, but employment will increase by about 4% and prices will increase by about 6%. And again, this you can get by looking at your notes on the circular flow model. This is one of the experiments in the circular flow model. We increase the money supply by more than the amount of cyclical unemployment. All right, question 16. Based on the circular flow model as presented in recent lectures, and starting from an unemployment equilibrium, decide whether each of the following statements is true or false. Then choose the best answer from among A through E below. Circular flow model, starting from unemployment equilibrium. What happens if the government cuts taxes? This will cause the economy to grow? No, the economy will not grow according to the classical flow model, so statement one is false. Two, if the government increases government spending, this will cause the economy to grow. That is false also. In the circular flow model, as presented in lectures, the economy will not grow from an increase in government spending. Statement three, if the government increases the money supply, this will stimulate the economy to grow. Well, starting from an unemployment equilibrium, increasing the money supply does cause the economy to grow. So statement three is correct. So the best answer is statements one and two are false, but three is true. Now we come to question 17, and just above it is the formula for the Keynesian model. Here is a Keynesian model question. Assume government tax revenues come entirely from taxes similar to property taxes, not at all from revenue sources which vary with income. Aha, that tells you that little t is equal to zero. Take a look at your derivation and your notes about the formula for tax revenue, and you realize that little t is... If little t is positive, that results in an increase in economic activity, increasing taxes. They're saying the opposite in this question. Also, assume the MPC equals 0.9. Well, little c is the marginal propensity to consume, so little c equals 0.9. The marginal propensity to import is 0.1. Well, little w is 0.1. Now, the government cut property taxes by $10 billion and no other variables change. Okay? Property taxes is capital T plus T sub P. T sub P. So T sub P goes by minus 10, but it's multiplied by C, which is 0.9. So it goes to minus 9. All right? When taxes are cut, when minus C times TP is reduced, then that means that the total of autonomous spending goes up by 9, because it's minus a minus 9, or plus 9. Okay, now the next, and so what is the size of the multiplier? What is the value of 1 divided by 1 minus C plus W? Well, T is 0, and so we have 1 minus C, which is 1 minus 0.9, which equals 0.1, plus W, which is 0.1, so 1 over 0.2. 1 over 0.2 is 5. So we have 5 times plus 9, or plus 45. So economic activity will increase by 45 billion. That's question 17. Now, question 18, using the Keynesian model as developed in recent lectures, if the multiplier equals 2, so 1 divided by 1 minus t parentheses 1, or 1 minus c parentheses 1 minus t close parentheses plus w, that is the multiplier, that fraction, and that has the value 2. Gross investment increases by 15 billion, exports increase by 5 billion, that's a total of up 20. Government spending drops by 10, so now we're only up 10. 15 plus 5 minus 10. So we're up 10, and times the multiplier of 2 means that there has been a $20 billion increase in economic activity. So the correct answer is economic activity will increase by $20 billion. Question 19. In the Keynesian multiplier model, if the marginal propensity to consume falls, the economy will what? Well, refer to the equation above, and the marginal propensity to consume is little c. And if little c becomes smaller, it has two effects. But the most important of those two is the effect on the multiplier. If c becomes smaller, so instead of 1 minus 0.9, you have 1 minus 0.8, then the denominator becomes larger. The denominator becomes larger, the multiplier, 1 divided by the denominator, becomes smaller. So when C becomes smaller, the multiplier becomes smaller, and economic activity goes down. If you don't believe it, you can take the spreadsheet and you can, that is downloadable off of my website, the spreadsheet for the Keynesian model, and take a look at the equilibrium GDP and then make little c smaller and take a look at it again, and you'll see that the equilibrium of GDP drops. Question 20. Which of the following statements about measuring prices are true? Okay, now this question asks you to remember all of our thinking about how to measure inflation and the problems of measuring inflation and so on. So there are four statements. We'll take a look at each one. Statement one, if my base year basket costs $30,000 to purchase this year, and 3 years from now it costs $33,000 to purchase the same base year basket, then the price index based on this basket will tell you that prices have risen by 10%. That's exactly right. That's exactly how we calculate inflation, by looking at the change in the cost of buying the same bundle of goods, the base year basket. Statement two, if the cost of my base year basket has risen 10%, then the cost of your base year basket has also risen by 10%. No, that's not necessarily true. My base year basket may include dog food because I have a dog. Your base year basket may not, because you don't like dogs or don't have one. And just because the cost of my basket goes up because the price of dog food goes up doesn't mean the cost of your cost of living has gone up. So statement two is false. Statement three, a new base year basket must be calculated every few years, otherwise inflation starts looking lower than it really is. Well, it is true that a new base year basket must be calculated every few years, but it's not necessarily true that inflation starts looking lower than it really is. The the inflation, according to the base year baskets, depend on what is happening to the prices of those obsolete goods. And if those obsolete goods happen to be rising in price, then the obsolete price index may look like there's inflation is higher than it really is. Could be the goods you're actually buying nowadays, their prices are not changing, but the prices of the things you used to buy, like telephones, or, you know, well, some goods you used to buy in the old days, it might be that calculated inflation is either lower or higher. So statement three is false because of the second phrase. Statement four, if a good rises in price and also in quality, calculated inflation will be lower than actual inflation. No, that's backwards. Calculated inflation will be higher than actual inflation. See, if a good rises in price, that makes it look like there's inflation. The cost of buying the good has gone up, but if the good lasts longer or is better in some way, then you don't feel like the cost has gone up. You feel like you're still getting a bargain, even though it's costing more money. So actual inflation is lower. Calculated inflation is higher than actual. So the only statement that's correct is number one. Only statement one is correct is the answer. Question 21. In the opinion of your instructor, recessions and depressions are caused by economic shocks. Which take the form of unexpected changes in supply and or demand for goods, leading people to delay purchases of discretionary goods, or are caused by declines in the rate of growth of the money supply. Choose the most complete answer. The part about economic shocks is, but the part about declines in the rate of growth of the money supply is not a good summary of what your instructor believes. Okay, now this is a little bit of a tricky question. You're being asked to calculate or to guess what I believe, and I haven't necessarily talked about everything that I believe, but we have discussed economic shocks. And I have said that recessions and depressions are caused by economic shocks, which are unexpected changes. And when I talked about recessions being caused by economic shocks, I did not discuss that declines in the rate of growth of money supply are another kind of cause. Fact is that changes in the rate of growth of the money supply can cause recessions. I mean, if we suddenly reduce the rate of growth of money supply or cause the rate of growth of, or cause the money supply to decline, we can create a recession. But that would be an economic shock. And so the word or is incorrect. Now, the other answers are also bad. Neither part of the statement is a good summary of what your instructor believes. That's not correct. The first part is a good summary. The complete statement is a good summary of what your instructor believes. No, that's not correct, because the second part is wrong. The above statement is incomplete because your instructor also believes fiscal policy shocks such as tax increases or cuts in government spending also have caused several recessions or depressions. Well, the statement is not incomplete because although it is true that tax increases or cuts in government spending, if they're unexpected, could lead to recessions or depressions, they are, those would be more examples of economic shocks. The statement says that economic shocks cause the recessions. So the best answer is, the part about the economic shocks is, but the part about declines in the rate of growth of the money supply is not a good summary of what your instructor believes. Question 22. Choose the most complete answer. The equation I sub n equals r plus e sub I, which tells about the relationship between nominal and real interest rates, tells us what? Now, for that, the relationship between nominal and real interest rates. We discuss the fact that when inflation occurs, that if people expect it or don't expect it, whether people expect it or don't expect it is a determinant of whether the inflation causes a transfer from the lenders to the borrowers. Inflation, which is expected, avoids that, but also inflation, which is expected, causes nominal interest rates to rise to include the expected inflation. So we have this formula, I equals R plus E sub I, and E sub I is the expected rate of inflation. And that formula is going to be very important later when we discuss interest rates and how they change in a macro economy. Because so far we've really only been discussing what happens to real interest rates. In all of our experiments that we've done, the expected rate of inflation has not changed. It has been zero. Even if prices changed, people didn't expect the price change, and the expected inflation was zero. So whenever interest rates went up or went down, that was real interest rates that were going up or going down. And of course, nominal interest rates were going up or going down also, but only because they include real. But if expected inflation changes, that changes interest rates also, according to that formula. All right, looking at the different answer possibilities, first, if the expected rate of inflation goes down, that would be E sub I goes down. And nominal interest rates are unchanged, so I sub N is unchanged. Then real interest rates must have gone up. Well, that's true if you believe in the equation and you're going to hold the left side unchanged. And you're going to reduce one of the numbers on the right, you're going to have to increase the other number, otherwise the equation becomes false. So that statement is correct. What about the next one? If the expected rate of inflation goes down and real interest rates are unchanged, then nominal interest rates must have gone up. Okay, the expected rate of inflation goes down, E sub I goes down, real interest rates are unchanged, then the nominal interest rates would have gone down, not up. So that one statement is incorrect. What about if the expected rate of inflation goes down and real interest rates are unchanged, then nominal interest rates must have gone down, okay? So expected rate of inflation goes down, E sub I goes down, and real is unchanged, then nominal rates must have gone down, I sub N must have gone down. Yes, that's true. So statements A and C are correct. All right, question 23. If the multiplier is 2 and autonomous expenditures decline by $100 billion, and the assumptions of the Keynesian model are valid, then economic activity will, the answer is, decrease by $200 billion. To do this one, you needed to remember that the change in economic activity equals the multiplier times the change in autonomous spending, or that the level of economic activity equals the multiplier times the level of autonomous spending. And that fact is in our discussion in your notes about the Keynesian model from lecture. Question 24. If firms increase their investment spending, the resulting changes in equilibrium GDP is equal to the change in investment spending. If firms increase their investment spending, the resulting change in equilibrium GDP is not equal to the change in investment spending. It's equal to the change in investment spending multiplied by the multiplier. Again, this the same formula that you need for the previous question. So the correct answer is equal to the change in investment spending multiplied by the Keynesian multiplier. Okay, question 25, what are automatic stabilizers? That is discussed in the textbook. And on pages 269 to 271, automatic stabilizers. The basic idea of automatic stabilizers is the multiplier is not as big as you thought. The simple version of the multiplier is the marginal propensity to 1 over 1 minus the marginal propensity to consume. But once you start using a more realistic model, you discover that the multiplier is smaller than that. The multiplier doesn't equal 1 over 1 minus MPC. It equals 1 over 1 minus MPC times 1 minus little t, which makes it smaller. And also, it equals that whole thing plus little w for imports, the marginal propensity to import, which also makes the denominator bigger and therefore the multiplier smaller. And so all of these facts mean that the change in autonomous spending will not have as big a shock on the economy. That is a good thing when the shock is causing the recession. It's a bad thing when you're trying to change autonomous spending to cure the recession. At any rate, these automatic stabilizers reduce the fluctuations of GDP by reducing the additional spending that occurs in each round of the multiplier. Now the final question, question 26. Which of the following is considered the major cause of the recession of 2001? This you can get out of the table on page 238, which I again commend to you for the next test. And the decline, the recession of 2001, according to this text, was triggered by a slowdown in new technology and a decline in spending on capital equipment. Spending on capital equipment is investment spending. So it was a decrease in investment spending, which was the cause of that recession. And that is the end of the discussion of the text.